Okay, Jonathan, thank you for joining me today on the CFDG podcast. Super happy to have you here. So, Jonathan, you are the your organization is the Jewish Initiative for Animals, also known as JIFA. Is that what you call it?
Yes. That's the acronym.
So I would just start, I want to start by inviting you to tell me about yourself and your organization and what you do in the world.
Glad to. And first, thank you so much for having me and for giving me this opportunity to share the work that we do, work that's, you know, in no small measure been influenced by, you know, the work that you do here at Clean Food Dirty Girl. So I'm the executive director of this group called Jewish Initiative for Animals. And our basic goal is to try to make the Jewish community as plant-based, as humanly, and as humanely as possible. Mm. And from our perspective, when we look at Jewish tradition and what Jewish articulates as to what is a fit or kosher way to consume the resources of this world, from our point of view as an organization, you know, it's really hard to not be plant-based under these circumstances. And what we try to do is we try to help communities align their food choices with the values that our tradition articulates. And that's really, that's long and short of it. That's really all of our work summed up.
Yeah. Well, I love that. When you can sum up your work in a, you know, just like that, it is, to me, that's, it's good. I mean, it's understandable and it's concise and it's to the point. And I love that. So I'm wondering, let's just start at the beginning then. So this is your mission. This is what you're doing. How did you personally get started on this path?
So for me, it was to coming together of a number of different threads. I first started really as a vegetarian, took me one night working in a chicken coop on a kibbutz in Israel. And I started down my path towards being a vegetarian, and I was vegetarian on and off. And then when I started in my congregation, I'm an ordained rabbi. And when I started in my congregation, you know, by then I was a vegetarian. And those talks sort of integrated themselves into my work, especially after 2006, I think it was, or 2008, where there was this terrible, terrible expose of a kosher slaughterhouse. And it just was, it was just wrong on every level. And it just was a glimpse into really how truly awful animal ag industry is, how unhealthy it is, how cruel it is to the animals, cruel it is to the workers, cruel it is to the earth. And that really sparked my own further development. And started talking about it more and more in my congregation here in Los Angeles. And then my wife came across Clean Food Dirty Girl.
And it all fit together.
I was a vegetarian and she wasn't. But she came across through a friend of hers, and it was just a good way for her to cook. And so we just started having vegan meals, which was fine because I was already a vegetarian and she was interested in the food and it was healthy and felt good and so forth. And that just sort of furthered our path. And then, you know, yeah, I decided to go vegan. And then when I left my congregation a couple of years ago, an opportunity opened up to work in the animal rights world, but in the Jewish corner of it. And that gave me the opportunity to work, you know, with this organization and do this really, you know, very sacred and holy work.
I love that. Thank you for sharing. I have a lot of questions. I want to start with this. What makes something kosher? Can we just start there at the very basics and then kind of untangle this?
Absolutely. So what makes something kosher is there a number of different factors. First, just innately, there's certain animals that are considered kosher and not kosher. Such that, you know, pigs, for example, are not kosher. It doesn't matter how one would slaughter it, it would still not be kosher. Whereas a cow is considered kosher, but it would only be fit to eat, and the food itself would only be considered kosher if it was treated and then slaughtered in a proper way. So that's one element of what it is to keep kosher. Keeping kosher also applies to how one actually cooks the food. Mixing milk and meat, for example, is prohibited in Jewish tradition. So in no small measure, the classic understanding is milk represents life and meat represents death. And Jewish tradition understood from very, very early on that eating meat was a concession, not an ideal. But an understanding concession, and therefore, even therefore, it's therefore you don't mix life and death, so you don't mix those elements together. That's a part of what it is keeping kosher. So it's a broad term that deals with how food is prepared, where the food comes from, and who oversees the production of the food as well.
Okay, so there's a lot of tiers and a lot of layers to this.
Really complex word.
Okay, so. There's a lot of meat and dairy that are kosher, right? You have a lot of, in your culture, there's a lot of meat and dairy. So doing something that's not having anything to do with meat or dairy, is this something that is this unusual?
Yes, and actually I would say yes and no. So is it unusual to be articulating a Jewish diet that does not include meat and dairy, since these things seem to be so innate? The answer is yes, but sort of no as well. You know, one of the things that I don't think we realize is that compared to earlier times, the sheer volume of animal products that we consume has gone through the roof. Right. I mean, we don't consume animals in the way and the level that they were consumed in biblical times, for example. So yes, meat has always been a part of Jewish tradition, but it used to be a special thing. Eating meat was a special thing primarily reserved for Friday nights, for Shabbos, for Shabbat, for the Friday night meal. So yes, it's always been a part of Jewish tradition, but the amounts have not been the same. And therefore, when we're articulating a change, is it untraditional? Sure, compared to where the Jewish diet is now. But has our diet always been this way?
Right.
No. And would change be appropriate on every level? Absolutely.
Okay, so it's unusual or not, depending on what, you know, when in time we're looking at it, I suppose would be one way to put it.
Look, at this moment, I would say the message that we're bringing forward is really a radical one.
Right? Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Do you get any pushback from this at all from your community?
In that deliciously, delightfully passive way, yes.
Tell me more.
Well, for example, you know, oftentimes when I'm at a congregation or an institution, I'm presenting Jewish sources and we're talking about this from a Jewish perspective. You know, a lot of people understand that Jewish tradition actually has a lot of very important values and obligations that it places upon human beings in terms of how we're meant to treat the animals. Oh, and by the way, you know, little spoiler alert, even from the point of view of Jewish tradition, we're failing in this miserably, just to put that aside. Right? But people will listen and be like, oh, yes, very good, yeah. And then we'll talk about, okay, so now when we take these values and we start applying them to our day-to-day lives, what changes might we envision, right? And as soon as we get to a conversation about change, people are like, oh, you know, I'll have to think about that, right? Which means, yeah, maybe not.
Okay, so when it affects the behavior, the day-to-day behavior, then it's a little bit more,
right?
Maybe not.
Oftentimes it's not hard to convince people that Jewish tradition places upon us all sorts of ethical requirements about how to treat, you know, the other animals with whom we share this world. Easy enough. It's pretty black and white, actually. And very straightforward when we talk about, you know, how these animals are meant to be treated going forward and our obligation to them. Also, you know, all very straight. And then you talk about their changing behavior and it's just harder. And that's always, and people very rarely will say to me, oh, no, absolutely can't do that. Because no one wants to admit that they can't change their behavior, but it is such a huge struggle for all of us. And I know it well. It takes me years to change my behaviors.
Okay. So that's kind of the work. It's like getting the message out there and then also providing the support for people to actually be able to make that change if and when they might be ready. Absolutely. So it's a process, basically. And that's, you know, for everybody, I think that's the process. It's like, oh, this sounds like it makes a lot of sense. This sounds really good. Oh, but now I can't have butter.
No. You know? So I was listening, but here's what I appreciate. So I was listening to one of your earlier podcasts where we were talking about, okay, what is it to be spiritual? Right. And I appreciate the way you were talking about it, because it wasn't an all or nothing approach. Right. And it wasn't that, oh, if you do this, you are somehow on this higher spiritual plane. No, it just doesn't work that way. Right. It's a matter of being open to it and continually engaging in it and understanding that that's hard for everybody. Right. So I have a lot of compassion for people as I engage this material with them. I always tell people when they ask me at dinner, if I'm at a dinner party or something like that, when people ask me what I do, I always tell them, don't ask. Like, you don't want to talk to me over dinner. Trust me, not the place, because it's just hard. And you have to kind of work with people continually to open them up to the possibilities and to the need. And that's kind of what we try to do as an organization. We work with institutions to help them set the kind of policies where, you know, they can create more plant-based options for their congregants or anyone who is participating in that institution's programming.
That's awesome. So can you give me some examples of some of that work you've done with what kind of institutions you've worked with and how that's gone?
So we work, you know, so for example, we'll work with a congregation. There was a congregation here in Los Angeles that we're working with. And we provided them support as they actually had the leadership. They came to us already well on the way. So we were just kind of almost tagging along and just providing additional support. But they had leadership that decided, like, no, we need to be plant-based, right? And what we talk about with people is we don't want to take away people's options. We just want to actually just kind of change the balance and expand them. So what this congregation did and what we worked with them on is being plant-based means plant-based was what they offered, but people could opt for a meat meal if they wanted. Right. And so we would talk through with that congregation. Okay, how do you do that? What kind of policy allows you to both be plant-based, but serve those people who still want to eat meat? Because we believe people are going to still want to eat meat. You can't take that away. You can't expect an institution to go vegan all at once. It's just not going to happen. And in Jewish tradition, there's no obligation to, in that at least theoretically, it is possible to keep kosher in this world by consuming animals. But we believe in creating more options for people, and so have the default be the vegetarian one or the vegan one, the plant-based one, and then have people choose to eat meat. And we work with institutions through something like that. So there's a congregation here that we work with to help them set up the kind of policies, even down to how they serve the food, what order you put the food out in, and how you celebrate it. And so that's the kind of work that we do with institutions to help them through that kind of transition.
Yeah, it's very inclusive. It's a very inclusive approach. And I think that approach, it really resonates with me. And that's very much how I kind of approach my work too, is, hey, this is an option. If you're doing something else, it's okay. But like, this is an option as well, if you want to try it out, you know? Right. And I think that's really much more appealing to people than to say, oh, well, now you have to eat vegan. You know, because even if there was a desire or a curiosity, that can sometimes stifle it.
Right.
By just presenting no options.
You know? Absolutely. Look, and food is so personal and so intimate and tied to our identity and our communities and our cultures and our histories. You know, I mean, there's a reason why most of us, when we go on a quote unquote diet, why most of us tend to fail that. Right? Because changing one's eating habits is so profound and so difficult, and it's such a challenge for us. And there's so much cognizant dissonance between how we eat and what we actually say, and I'm going to eat healthy, but I'm eating this bag of Doritos because they're really delicious. Yeah, it's so very difficult that you've got to be able to meet people where they are and help them, as hopefully others helped us, open ourselves up to the possibilities.
Yeah. And so are you seeing, in those institutions that you've worked with, are you seeing some change with the members? And is there, you know, have there been people who have changed their day-to-day life and who have seen benefits from it or have what is the word I'm looking for? Like enjoyed this process and has come out the other side happy that they've done it.
Well, we have institutions that are going through the process and whether they're going to be happy about it, you know, we'll talk about that. No, for the most part, very much so. you know, what I would say is that, yes, we've had a number of institutions and really in moving them along, what they've seen is that it engages people, it challenges people. And are we seeing more and more interest? The answer is absolutely, right? Across the board, you know, as we're able to offer from our organization more and more programs geared towards helping institutions, we're finding more and more institutions are really curious because they're hearing it from their congregants and they're seeing it in their children, right? So for example, you know, Lori and I, we have three boys. None of them are plant-based or vegan in any way, shape, or form. They are, however, very conscious of the food that they eat. They're very aware of what they take in, and they try to eat very healthfully. And so I think I was talking to all of them at one point in time. None of them has cow milk or only cow milk in their fridge. Right? They all have one and or two alternatives at least, and most of them don't. They'll say their friends don't drink cow's milk, right? Now, that's just happening, right? That's not, you know, that's when it becomes just part of it, and that's happening more and more. And so what I share with my colleagues at the head of these institutions is I'm like, if you want to start signaling to that next generation that you understand where they're coming from, you might want to consider the food choices that you're offering.
Yeah.
Because they're going to want more and more of it. And so I see institutions that are open and they're responsive. And look, you look around the world and you see the impact that our food choices are having on our climate. And these institutions are very serious about trying to tackle that to the extent that they can within the parameters that work for them. And I think all of that feeds more and more of an interest in this kind of eating.
Yeah. Yeah. You hit on a couple of really important things. I think, you know, the first thing is there's a lot, like the younger people are much more clued up now and the options are so much more available. I've never eaten meat my whole life, right? I'm 43, never had it, raised vegetarian, went plant-based in 2010, 2011. But the amount of products just at the grocery store, like oat milk and soy milk and, you know, all the different milks, I mean, kids now are growing up in a totally different world with access to this stuff is not taboo anymore, right? Right. When I was growing up, I was the really weird kid who, you know, had all the weird food, but it's just not like that anymore. So I think and I think then for the older generations to be like, hey, let's, you know, if you want to understand where they're coming from, like, let's kind of adapt to this in one way or the other. So I think that's really important. And, and the other point that you hit on too, what was it? And I'm going to forget. You said something really good at the end of that. And now I'm not remembering it. So I have a question. Is it easier to eat kosher when you're vegan than it is when you're an omnivore? Let's start with that.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And it's in part because by definition, pretty close. I mean, if you want to get crazy technical, because, you know, Jews can get crazy technical when it comes to our food stuff, you can always find a problem. But in essence, vegan is the original kosher. Right. And that's actually a relatively factual. That is factual, biblically speaking, because if in the first chapter of the book of Genesis, right, God says to all the animals that they can consume plants. Explicitly, humans and all the other animals are told to be are plant eaters. Right. Mm-hmm. So when you look at it from that perspective, you know, like I said, vegan was the original kosher.
Yeah. Well, that's how can you argue with that?
That's what I always say. You know,
how can you argue with that?
It's crazy how unconvincing that seems to be to people, but I try.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember the other thing I was going to say. The you know, the when we eat a plant-based diet, it's like it's one thing that we can do that has so many far-reaching positive benefits in so many areas of life. And that's what I really love about this way of eating and sharing this way of eating with people, is that the same way of eating that's good for, you know, the body to thrive is the best for the animals and is the best for the environment. And so I think that going at it from, you know, a three-prong approach, if you will, like, hey, it's healthy for us, it's good for the animals, it's good for the planet, it's good as a species, it's good for our, you know, even our spirituality. I can't think of another thing that has such a positive impact on so many levels. Mm-hmm. And I think that's once people really get that, it becomes an easier choice to make once they're willing to try. Anyways, and I've heard a lot of people say, oh, you know, I've tried this and now I really feel like I'm living my values. Like, yeah. I really am not just, you know, voicing what's important to me, but I'm living what's important to me.
Well, you know, there's an element of this of taking the red pill, right? There's an element of this of kind of like having the matrix pulled back so you can actually, the curtain pulled back so you can really see the matrix, right? And it takes a while. It takes a while to really kind of begin extracting yourself, because we've been fed messages about our food that's just outrightly not true, right? Happy cows do not live in Wisconsin, let me tell you. Cows in Wisconsin are very unhappy. The use of the word farm to describe any of these things, ridiculous, right? So yeah, people start feeling like they're living their true selves because they're able to think a little bit more clearly and see things a little bit more accurately and experience things in a more healthful way. So it's very much a, you know, part of the work and going through the process. And that's why I said, you know, it always takes time and requires a lot of patience.
Yeah. Yeah. And some good recipes, that helps too.
Yes, and I believe we've gotten many of those good recipes from you. We're doing the Taco Bell week, I think, this week.
Oh, it's so good. I had so much fun.
Right. And look, and as you said, you know, you eat this food and it's good for you. It's good for the animals and it's good for the planet. You know, my organization starts with the animals, but we understand that different people will resonate with different messages.
Yeah.
And our goal is to offer as many different messages for people to see which one connects. But they're all true.
Yes, they are all true and they're all important. And I think it was Dr. Garth Davis in one of his books or something I was reading of his. And early on when he was making this transition, he would go about, you know, a few months eating this way and he'd feel really good and he'd be, you know, feeling energized. And then he would kind of slip back into, you know, meat and dairy. And it was kind of this pattern. And then one day he came across some videos, some, you know, maybe some PETA videos or some, you know, some videos that really show the reality of farming. Right. And that's what it took. He's like, I never had any moments where I went back to my old ways after seeing that video. So yes, I started with health, but then after learning just how horrendous these practices are, that's what keeps me eating this way.
Right.
So I think there are different ways. There's different doors that lead to this, but I think that all of them can play a role in the, you know, the journey of continuing to eat this way and doing it, you know, for a long time. And you can eat this way forever. And it's not, you know, you're not missing any on anything, right? You can, I've never eaten meat my whole life and I'm really healthy. So, but it's just, you know, different things resonate with different people and we can all use those as, you know, sort of supportive pillars going forward.
Yeah, no, it's true. Yeah. And I couldn't tell you, you know, people ask me like, so what made you, right? Mm-hmm. How did you get, you know, here? And honestly, look, you know, I'm sure I can come up with a couple of really good stories about it. But in the end, I think it's that combination of things over time. And, you know, if it's going to really take, it takes time to kind of work its way down into your soul. So it becomes just kind of like a part of who we are and how it is that we want to be in this world. And having good recipes, very helpful.
So let's talk about recipes. Let's talk about food, because there are some like Jewish staples, right? Like matzo ball soup and, are these recipes, these kind of staples, things that you have, figured out ways to veganize, or are these things that you just don't have anymore and you eat other things? Like what is, talk about that a little bit.
So personally, and my organization, and actually I think really almost everyone I know who's engaged in cooking has definitely veganized just about everything, right? And at this point in time, it's not a question of whether or not it's been veganized. The question is, how good is it getting, right? Because those first attempts sometimes at, let's say, your faux matzo ball chicken soup, it might take some time. I mean, let's face it, the vegan world, we're still trying to work out cheese. I mean, we're getting there, but it takes some time. So yeah, personally, I'm always up for any kind of veganized recipe. There's certain things I didn't eat even when I was, just a kid and just growing up. Like, I do not need to have veganized crab cakes. I don't need that. I'm not eating that. I just don't eat that. I didn't eat that when I could eat it. I'm not eating it now that I can't. But you see a whole bunch of these kinds of things out there, and it's really important to develop these kinds of recipes. Because, you know, as I say to people, look, it'll never taste quite as good or quite the same to you necessarily, because you have this memory of what it tastes like in your head. But it'll taste good enough, and it does more than just good enough, so that it'll be worth it.
Yes.
And I find people are game to try, and some of these things work and some of them don't. But I think it's really important, because I think, as I said, food is a very emotional issue.
Yeah, it is. It is. And I think it's important to remind people too, that their taste buds will change, right? And what we find yummy will change. And I also like to remind people, having a piece of pizza with melty cheese on it, right? There's never going to be, there are some decent vegan cheeses out there. But if you're really used to that, it is going to be different. But eventually that is going to taste out of place when you're used to eating more, healthy plant foods. It's just going to feel like a very odd sensation to have in your mouth. So, it's a journey that our palates, that our taste buds, the messages that those taste buds send to the brain, it's this journey. And so I like to remind people of that as well.
I'm actually curious then, when you come home with some of the menu ideas, right? So are you thinking to yourself, okay, we're going to take this particular dish and we're going to veganize it, or what portion of that kind of approach drives what you do? And I say this, by the way, like I said, we're doing the Taco Bell night. I mean, I love these things. So
yes. So it really depends. Like, we've been doing this, for so long, first of all, and we're always coming up with new recipes and new themes for meal plans and stuff. And we have to keep people interested, right? Like, we can't do the same thing over and over. It depends. Like, I haven't, when we started out, I was doing all of the meal plans, all of the recipes. We were a team of two, and it was a hustle to really get this done. My way of creating recipes and meal plans really has nothing to do with trying to make something similar to something else, because 9 times out of 10, I don't know what it's like. Like, I don't know what a burger tastes like. I don't know what, a fish, crab cake tastes like, right? Like, I can't tell you. I don't know. So my approach to developing recipes and meal plans is different from, let's say, Tammy's approach, right? She's one of our recipe developers and meal planners. She has a family full of omnivores, and she herself no longer eats meat, but her family really likes different restaurants. And so she's looking for ways, like, oh, well, what if I could do like that soup from Panera Bread, right? I would really like to make that whole food plant-based. So I think it's a little bit different for each of us. But for me, I just really like to make super healthy whole plant foods taste yummy. And I don't really have that idea of what is, what could it kind of resemble. I'm just like, does it taste good?
Fair enough.
You know, but I mean, it appeals like that. It appeals to different people, right? People who are just new to this might really enjoy that Taco Bell plan because they're like, yes, this is something that's familiar to me and something, right? And then somebody else might think, oh, that's just, you know, I just want to stick to lots of salads and bowls, you know? Right. Yeah.
No, I think, and I would definitely fall into that first category of, at least at first, having the foods that were familiar and just being able to be like, oh, okay. You know, I was always on the hunt for like that amazing veggie burger.
Right.
I tried every brand because that was always my favorite food. Like was like a cheeseburger. When I was growing up. My favorite food as a little kid, and obviously, you know, moved away from that. But was always looking for that, and just knowing you could have something similar, it helps.
Yeah.
It just helps in the process.
I think psychologically, it helps, right? Yeah. And that sometimes like, and then that helps the actual action that we're taking. So, okay. I want to talk a little bit more about your work. So what does your day-to-day look like? What, are you working on any projects right now that you're really excited about? Like what is your world look like right now in terms of the work that you're doing in the world?
We have a number of projects that we're working on right now that are pretty excited about. The biggest one, is we're looking to enter into a partnership with a group called the Rabbinical Assembly, which is essentially the union of conservative rabbis, here not being political, but a religious denomination. And it's still basically the more traditional end of the liberal Jewish spectrum, if you will, is where my denomination sits. And it has over 1,200, 1,400 rabbis as part of it. It represents over 600 congregations, and we're looking to enter into a partnership with them. And we're just working out the final details to be able to share this work in a way with the movement. And that kind of work, to be able to work on an institutional level with such a wonderful group, and also, you know, a more mainstream group, kind of being able to bring this message, you know, to an even broader audience, is really, really exciting for us.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, that's great. So what is your ideal outcome for all of this?
Well, I'd love to be out of a job in 10 years.
I love that. I can feel that. I really resonate with that answer.
Not because I'm not going to be working. I will be working. I would like this job to not be necessary. I mean, look, our outcome is very concrete. It's, as I said to you before, you know, we walk away from, you know, working with a group of people. We want that institution to have a policy. We want them to have something in writing that reduces their use of animal products, that celebrates the food that they're serving, that's plant-based, and that looks to future ideas and future ways of bringing these values to more issues of food and the rest of the congregation. So we look to be able to plant these kinds of policies that serve as catalysts for reflection and change within the institutions. So every interaction we come away with, it's not, did they like us? Did they listen to us? Did they agree with us? Which we'd like all of those things. We that's great. But did we come away affecting policy? Because policy stays. People change, but policies can influence institutions, and institutions influence a lot of individuals. And so our theory of change is that if you can both nudge and nudge these institutions down this path, the ability to affect a large group of people is tremendous.
Mm. Yeah, that's powerful. I want to talk a little bit about some of the, you have the great campaign, your billboard campaign, I thought was fabulous, very catchy, very clever. And we'll put the links to all of these resources in the show notes as well. I thought that was, it really stops and makes you think, and you did it in few words, and you did, I just thought it was spot on. Can you talk about that campaign a little bit?
Sure. I mean, just in general, we look to run, you know, one or two campaigns a year now, where instead of our work is primarily working with institutions. So that's where we focus our day to day, but in order to have a little bit of fun, and also influence and try to engage the broader community in conversation, we have these different campaigns. This particular billboard campaign is under the Is This Kosher? Right. And look, we put out there that a lot of these businesses, a lot of these food businesses use the word kosher to hide what they're actually doing. Right? And they use the word kosher, and it's what we call kosher humane washing, which is because of the association that people have with the word kosher. You see the word kosher on something, you have an implicit bias towards it. And thinking that it represents somehow, to tap into the old commercial, somehow represents a higher authority. Right? So, but it's not true. That's not true. It's a blatant lie. And our job is to try to be able to invite people to really look at where their food comes from. And begin understanding what goes into the farming system that we support by the food choices that we make. And so that's what that campaign was about, was to kind of bring attention, saying, look, is this kosher? Come to the website, check it out. And we're, you know, look, we're not into grossing people out.
Yeah.
Right. We don't, you know, I understand there's different tactics, and I'm not even disagreeing with them, because different things work for different people, you know, but our point of view is, look, you don't need to throw up the most gross images in the entire world. Right. To challenge people, but you need to be able to show something, because visually people will react to that instantaneously, to at least provoke them and hopefully have them just like you. I mean, you'd be the ideal person, like, stop and be like, oh, right. That's what that campaign is about. And the idea, as I said, is to raise awareness that they call it kosher, but by no definition would that ever actually really pass as such.
I'm thinking about things like the USDA organic, you know, label, or even the non-GMO project has a sort of certified logo that they can put on their things when things are actually certified non-GMO. And I actually worked with the non-GMO project at a restaurant that I opened in Berkeley, and we were the first restaurant to have verified non-GMO, food verified by the non-GMO project. So when it comes to the kosher kind of label, is there, like, can literally anybody put that on, or is there some kind of check that goes, that a food has to go through? And is the standards just so terrible that it doesn't really matter? Like, can you talk a little bit about that?
So not anyone can just kind of create their own label. However, the oversight is somewhat, you have individual groups that take on labeling responsibilities because they have different standards. Mm-hmm. So certain things that one group says is okay, another group might not say is okay. Or in order to appeal to everyone, you might want to have both of them if you possibly can. It gets a little bit complicated in that sense. The individual groups themselves, right, there are certain things that the government has oversight of, but this is religious. These are religious communities acting out their laws. Unless it actually violates anything that the government oversees, then the government has very little oversight over this. Mm-hmm. So the standards themselves are set by these institutions, and it's a massive trust game, right? You trust the rabbis who are doing the inspection, that they're actually doing what they say they're doing, and they're representing what they say they're representing when they put that label on.
Mm-hmm.
And look, the other thing that people will say is, generally when you use the word kosher, remember we're talking about before, it can be used for so many things.
Yeah.
But interestingly, when it comes to when it comes to animals, the moment of slaughter is what people talk about when they say something is kosher or not.
Okay.
It doesn't seem to matter so much to them what happens from the time the animal is born to that moment. And some people will say, well, that's not a matter of keeping kosher. To which my organization says, okay, that's just a technical argument, but whatever, because Jewish tradition also says you can't cause unnecessary harm to animals. And so what we want to show is, look, this is what daily life is like for these animals, right? In a tradition that's told our obligation is to enable other animals to flourish.
Yeah.
We're doing the opposite. And the goal of these kinds of campaigns, different angles, different ways, is to try to bring this reality to people's attention and say to them, look, this is the way your food is getting to your table. What do you think? Kosher?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's complex. It's a complex issue. That's for sure. And it's, to me, when I'm hearing this, I'm thinking it'd be just a lot easier to not eat any meat and dairy, because then you don't have to worry about it.
Well, as I said, vegan is the original OG of kosher.
Right, right.
It's the original of it, but yeah, but as easy as that might seemingly make it.
Sounds easy to me, because I've done it for so long. It's like, this is an easy choice. This, you know, but again, you know, doing the all or nothing kind of thing works for some people, doesn't work for other people. And it's maybe not the best entry point for everybody. That's for sure.
I was absolutely terrified.
The first day
I left the house when Laura and I said, okay, we're going to try to be vegan for the next couple of weeks. Absolutely terrified when I left the house that day. I'm like, I'm going to starve. I'm going to starve.
It's going to be the end of you.
Right, yeah, and you learn over time to replace those kinds of foods and the things. We create new habits, and God willing, healthier habits along the way.
Okay, so was it as hard as you thought? Let's just go there. Was it as hard as you thought it was going to be?
Oh, definitely not. No, not nearly. My terror was pretty. Like, I'm like, really, what am I going to eat? Oh my goodness, but. It wasn't really that bad, because as you said, you know, look, from when you started doing this, right, to now, the options are amazing. I talk to people who've been doing this like since the 80s, and I am so impressed. Yeah. I mean, these people are troopers.
Yeah,
there was nothing around.
Nothing 80s. Around. No, and in fact, so my mom, she had been vegetarian from the moment she left her house when she graduated high school. She was born in 1943, so this was like a long time ago. As soon as she graduated high school and left the house, she stopped eating meat, because she just, it didn't sit well with her. Her grandpa was a butcher, so there's a lot of meat in her house, and it really gave her stomach problems, but her parents didn't really care. So that was the first thing she did when she left home, is just stop eating meat. And then in 1997, she became plant-based. And so even though I didn't turn plant-based until some years later, you know, I grew up with a mom that, you know, there was no option. I mean, okay, you could go to a Mexican restaurant and order some beans and rice if they didn't have lard. Like, that was about the extent. But other than that, everywhere we went, man, my mom would pack a lunch, pack our food, you know, sprouted bread with avocado and sprouts and a little bit of spritz of tamari and, you know, some chickpeas. And it's, you know, it's so much easier now. And you live in LA, so my goodness, you could just stop anywhere and get some yummy plant-based foods.
It's quite an evolution.
Yeah. And I find, I don't know, did you find when you went through this process, like the more you did it, did you feel that like more of a connection with your body and just your being in the world? Like, did it transform you in a way that was kind of hard to even put your finger on, and you kind of can't even explain unless you went through it? Like, did you have that sort of connection happen when you transitioned?
You know, people say, did you feel better? Do you feel healthier? And what we experienced was cutting dairy out. Mm-hmm. We really did sort of feel like, oh, that actually feels different, right? In terms of just our physical bodies. You know, I would say for me, in terms of, you know, the question that you're asking goes more though to the level of kind of almost like a certain consciousness or awareness.
Yeah.
You know, and for me, I would say that is still very much unfolding. Mm-hmm. You know, and what I'm realizing is that, you know, the message that we teach is ultimately one of compassion. We're talking about, you know, from where we start in this work, there's lots of ways, as we say, we can become plant-based, but my organization, we start with compassion towards animals, right? And then we realize, well, you know, when we talk about compassion towards animals, we often say human beings are animals too. So it's not enough to be compassionate just to the animals, let's say the farm factory animals, right? If this work is going to mean anything, we have to actually be compassionate to the humans that we're dealing with. The ones we like and the ones we don't like. Mm. Because if we don't actually show compassion across the board, then it's not really a value, it's just a preference. Mm. And that for me is an evolving challenge. One that the food that I eat on a daily basis reminds me is my obligation to take on.
Mm.
But I am so far from being there yet.
Well, you answered a very vague question in a very beautiful way. So thank you for that. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, I think we all are, you know, we're all a work in progress and none of us are perfect. And it's a daily thing, you know, we get to live our values with every time we get hungry and every choice we make, right? It's a really powerful and ongoing thing. I definitely agree with you. Yeah. So Jonathan, where can people find out more about you? Where can they dive into more of what you're doing and learn more?
Jifanimals.org.
Okay.
J-I-F-A, animals. J-I-F animals.
Jifanimals, I like that.
Jifanimals, yeah. And, you know, information is there on the website, and we encourage people to reach out to us. Any questions people have about work we're doing or any other way to kind of connect in terms of their Jewishness and their diets, mm-hmm. and different ways to look, we're glad to. If we don't have the answer, we're always glad to direct people to the right place.
Yeah, awesome. Well, thank you for sharing, and thank you for the good work that you are doing in the world. It was lovely, lovely to talk with you and to meet with you today. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate it as well, and just want to be real clear, wouldn't be here doing the work if it wasn't for Clean Food Dirty Girl.
Aw, that's so kind.
No, you know,
so kind.
Before changed, you know, our involvement in it really changed our eating and opened up, you know, things that we had not considered before. So much appreciated, mm-hmm. as well. Honored to be able to be here.
Well, thank you for that. So kind of you, and keep up the awesome work. And hello to your wife for me. Lori is your wife's name, right?
Yes, I will pass Lori. It on.
Yes, okay, please pass on. Tell her I said hello.
Shall do.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Take care.
Hey, thanks for listening. If you enjoy this podcast, you are going to love Plant Fueled Life, our monthly membership where we help you eat more plants and celebrate that beautiful human imperfection that we all have. You can try it out for free for 10 days by going to the show notes of this episode and clicking on free trial. You can also go to our website, cleanfooddirtygirl.com, and clicking on the banner at the top of the website, click on start free trial, and that'll get you there too. Also, if you enjoyed this episode or if you enjoy this podcast, will you do me a solid and rate and review it so that other people can find it as well? Okay, thanks so much. Yeah.